Sustaining It Live with Rita Steele on 95BFM.
All right, on the line we're joined by Brendan Dunphy, is that correct?
That's correct.
Senior Lecturer of Biological Sciences at the Auckland University Faculty of Science. Speaking as part of Raising the Bar, which is, just for those of you that are tuned in, a general event where I guess a bunch of experts in their fields from the University of Auckland head out to various bars across town and talk about the area of expertise. And on the, your day, what date are you speaking, Brendan?
I'm just, oh, 29th.
Tuesday the 29th of August, so in a couple of weeks' time, 6:30 p.m. down at 16 Tun, which is a great little bar down in Wynyard Quarter if you've not been before. Bit of a free house and plenty of beers on tap down there. Now, Brendan, broadly speaking, you're talking about shearwaters, which are, is a shearwater obviously a seabird, but it's not a seagull, is it?
No, that's correct. It's a it's the mutton bird, the titi, which you know, Māori harvesters down south will collect and eat.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, we've got a whole range of species here. I'm currently in the Waitaka Ranges myself, and there's, we've got shearwaters all through these hills here as well, so they're about to head out to sea at the moment. So,
okay, yeah. So do they nest in the ranges and then go and spend a bunch of time at sea, that sort of seabird?
That's the one, yep. So they live in a hole, basically raising a chick in a hole underground,
mm-hmm.
and they'll pair up, and one will head out to sea, feed up, bring back the food, and then they swap over. And so we're just using them as a indicator, an assay of what's going on out over the horizon in the ocean in terms of climate change.
Now, I mean, I guess the seabirds like of this variety are a lot more vulnerable to predators as well, because they are nesting on the ground, correct? They're not like just in a tree.
No, that's absolutely correct. And as an example, we had a stoat get on one island and it took out 76 diving petrels, so wiped the whole island clear, and that's just one stoat.
How quickly did that happen? You know, like, is it like one a day and it's just eating half a seabird and then moving on to the next?
Yeah, they're funny. They'll just stuff a den full of birds because they hibernate us. So it took it about a month just to clear out a whole colony. And that was 10 years ago and hasn't recovered. So there you go.
That sucks so much.
Yeah.
Now, okay, so just broadly, what is your chat going to be about? What can we learn from seabirds?
Yeah, it's basically the lessons that they're teaching us and me. Basically, I'm really fascinated in how they respond to climate change and the stress responses that they have. So the same stress responses that they have are what we have. So when we get stressed, we release the same sorts of hormones, everything like that. And so that gets laid down on their feathers, and we can use those feathers just to sort of analyse across years and sites, how stressed are the birds, what's the impact of warm water, heat waves, etc. on them. And so the talk I'm giving is sort of just covers that, but also broadly on stress itself, because we were working through COVID, looking at the, you know, the stress of birds, and I remember just sitting there thinking, well, I'm pretty freaking stressed myself, so I'm sure if you measured my hair, you'd find my stress levels are through the roof as well. And so just talking about those sorts of lessons that we can learn, but particularly around climate change and, you know, what will it mean, how do we need to respond to it, and really just to keep the hope alive that, you know, it all sounds pretty grim, but we do see hope out there, and, you know, we just got to remind ourselves of that. As it just seems like an endless cavalcade of bad headlines coming in.
I mean, what are the sort of key factors as part of the climate change equation that are really playing into big effects on these birds' lives?
The massive one is really marine heat waves. And so what that's doing is it's pushing their food further away. So they're flying further. And also, it's not as nutritious for them. It doesn't have the same energy content. So they're basically flying further, working harder, just to get the same amount of energy back. And so, in the Northern Hemisphere, there was a million, you know, just one particular bird, the guillemot, that just washed up dead from the shores of Alaska down to Canada, just from a marine heat wave. And so, we are just going to start presenting some of the work we've seen in the Hauraki Gulf, where we've had consecutive heat waves. Last year was the longest, strongest one we've seen, and it's just putting massive pressures on these birds, and so what tends to suffer is the actual chick itself. They have to make a decision. Do they keep continuing in this really poor environment, or do they just abandon and go and try again next year?
Yes. I mean, the Gulf itself, there's obviously a bunch of factors being so closely, you know, tied in with like the downtown aspect of, you know, Auckland Central and stuff like that. There's obviously a lot of issues with our wastewater and junk just flowing into the sea. Is that part of what you study, or is it more just about the overall heat wave?
No, it depends what birds you're looking at. So the penguins are getting really affected by the amount of sediment in the inner Gulf, and so you'll find that their numbers are really low. Because they're visual predators, they're struggling to find their food in the water that's got a lot more sediment. It's murkier, they can't see the fish and things like that. So they're actually struggling in the inner Gulf areas, but it's, yeah, like I said, it sort of depends what species you're looking at and how far out they fly.
Yes.
Yep. So, yep, the inner Gulf stuff, we do a bit of work on that, and yeah, it definitely has an impact. It'd be great to clean up the harbour, and yeah, just the inner Gulf waters themselves, get a lot of that sediment out.
What other sort of stuff, I mean, what could we do broadly speaking to help out birds like the shearwater specifically? Is there anything we can do locally to combat climate change or support the survival of these birds?
Yeah, there's a number of things. I mean, as an example, I'm part of a local trapping group. We go down, you know, and trap rats just to help our birds out. In terms of climate change, it's going to be everybody's involved in this one. So we've, you know, take the car one less day, or get if you can't afford it, an electric vehicle, all those sorts of things that we know to do.
Get on your bike, everyone. Ride your bike. Yeah. It's not that hard. Okay, that's
absolutely
my piece.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
No, good. Have at it, mate.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so it's that collective responsibility. You know, you can't save the world, only we can. So we've all got to do it together. And so I think that's sort of one of the lessons I see that these birds are telling us, that it's that collective action. In terms of Aotearoa, we've really got to start cleaning up the stoats, rats, everything further south, because that's where the birds are going to start pulling back. They're going to start heading towards the poles. And so we need to make those habitats down south more amenable to them as we start to see a shift in the distribution of the bird.
Basically anyone that I know that we're shifting towards a council compost bin, but I think anyone out there that has a compost bin on their property, or you know, a standard tree, should probably have a trap in the backyard. I know that I should do it. My father, just speaking from personal experience, my dad got into trapping possums in the local bush and was just getting so many possums out of the local bush. So, you know, you just, if you can, you know, head to Bunnings or wherever, or touch base, because there are a bunch of local groups which can supply traps and teach you how to use them, correct?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And that's what I'm part of. The council, you know, funds us. We put our traps out. I mean, I feel a bit sorry for the rats and the stoats. It's not their fault.
Yes.
You know, they didn't mean to be here, but they are having a massive impact.
Yeah.
And you know, we see the psychology research. I just read some the other day that shows if you hear birdsong, it basically allows you to feel a bit more calm and serene for the next 8 hours.
Mm-hmm.
So our hills are so silent, they should be full of noise. We need to bring that noise back, and that's part of what we're trying to do.
Yeah. All right. Hey, Brendan, was there any other parting remarks on your talk as part of Raising the Bar, which is happening at 16 Ton on the 29th of August?
Oh, simply come on down. Hopefully you'll learn something new. It'd be great to see you there. If nothing else, there's cold beers and very fine wines, you know, so you can have an enjoyable time. thanks for the opportunity.
Cheers, brother. All right, mate. We'll see you down there.
Cool, excellent.
Bye.
That was Sustaining Alive with Rita Steele on 95 BFM.